Hello and welcome to High Velocity Business Radio. This is Sander Bean, your host in this week for Desiree Scales. And Kevin, do you know what today is?
It's April Fool's Day.
Do you know how many people have played an April Fool's joke on me so far?
Zero. Or did your kids do it?
Nobody. I'm all ready for it, too. How about you? Anything?
No, the internet's blowing up as usual with April Fool's jokes, but that's about it, really.
Well, here, I wish it was business as usual, but it's not. We have a great guest in the studio with us today. We have Doug Lehman. Doug, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me, Sander. It's finally a chance to meet you in person.
I know it. Doug and I have known each other. We'll start as a disclaimer from the beginning. For many, well, at least a year and a half, we met through social channels on the internet. And when you hear Doug's profile here in a minute, you'll understand how it's pretty easy to bump into a guy like Doug.
Well, I'm excited to be here. And actually, I've been in the studio a couple of times. Twice as a guest and spent some time running the board, so it's good to get back at the studio and
back here. He's made his full circle.
So. Exactly.
Well, I'm glad we could accommodate for you, Doug. Well, for our listeners, I wanted to do a quick introduction of you to them. Doug Lehman has a diversified background in sales, marketing, and product training promotion. He worked for companies and organizations like IBM, Sun Microsystems, the Coca-Cola Company, Skytel, Cisco, to name a few. And as a brand ambassador and a member of the Atlanta bloggers community, Doug has a passion for customer engagement, training, leveraging the tools of sales, social media, and video to generate results. Doug specializes in sales training videos today in his newest venture called the Lehman's...
Lehman's
Terms of Business, which I think is great. Lehman spelled L-E-H-M-A-N, like Doug's last name. And Doug, very diverse background, very interesting background. Can't wait to hear more about it.
Well, thanks. I mean, it's something that's been a journey as an entrepreneur, something that I grew into. In fact, really started about 2010. Done corporate sales, done training, you know, held the bag, you know, carried a quota. Worked a territory, did all that for companies like IBM and Sun. And, you know, I don't know if this is your question, but I took a leap of faith as an entrepreneur and started adding video as part of a play in social business.
Right. And so before we get into the video, because we're going to want to talk about that a lot on this show. Doug's, that's your specialty, and it's an area that people are extremely interested in. But tell me about that leap of faith. You're going from a corporate job in some of the largest companies – technology companies in the United States, working in those businesses, and deciding you're going to move into a marketing role on your own? Wow. What?
Well, exactly. It was right around 2007. I've done some project works, part of that with Cisco and things, but you look at your journey and what you did in life. And I, you know, like I said, I've been in sales, I've been in marketing roles, but whether the economy goes one way or another, you hit your numbers, they have, you know, recessions, people get laid off, people move on. And after a couple hits in that and achieving your goals and numbers and still getting, you know, reduction in force, I said, you know what, I want to take these skills that I've done, take some time off, got a nice severance check, reassess the situation, and then come back. And I said, you know what, I want to be a salesman for hire. I want to be an independent rep and go out and sell to small businesses.
Yeah, you know, let me interject something here, because I've often thought about this myself, is that, you know, people talk about, well, it's really risky to be out on your own. But the fact of the matter is, it's pretty risky to be working in corporate America when you're not even sure whether someone's going to come out and say, oh, by the way, we're doing a force reduction, or we're getting rid of that division that you've been working in for the last couple of years, or whatever it might be. You can hope that they hold on to you, but, you know, it's just as risky in some regards to be working in corporate America as it is on your own.
That is so true. And I mean, I can only speak from experience. This has happened to me a few times. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I've left jobs, or I've been at, you know, a position like that. But the last one, I was like, you know, I want to try something different. Mm-hmm. And, you know, did some contract and temporary work in the same industry after that. Actually, Sun was the, which is now Oracle. I worked for a company called Storage Tech. So from Storage Tech to Sun to Oracle, you go figure. And I don't think it was buying Oracle anytime soon, but you never know. But I decided to build a website, go out on my own, and look, I've got all these transferable skills, all these trainings and all these certifications and this, that, and the other. Let me go out on my own and do that. And video play came about a year and a half later. Mm-hmm. Because I had a website, and it's like, great, I got a resume, great, I've done this. And the market was, it's still tough.
Yeah.
But a couple of years ago, it was brutal. It's Some people might say it's still bad. I don't know. I think we're turning, but
yeah, now
from a job market standpoint.
But you also have been a blogger, is that right? I mean,
right,
is that something
right.
you were doing for your business, or was it something you were doing before you started the business?
I'm what you call a video blogger. I'm not a wordsmith like you, okay? I'm not somebody that's going in, you know, I wish I was a better writer. If I had to go back to school again, I probably would do journalism. Still can go back to school, but I started video blogging. So I'd rather have the video speak in layman's terms and then put a few keywords. So I'm a video blogger. I launched a website, and the first two posts were written, you know, documents. Here's my blog. Then I incorporated the video, and it kind of grew.
And that's the www.douglehman.com?
Right, or Social Selling TV.
Social Selling TV. That might be even easier for our listeners.
Exactly, because when you say layman, you're going to spell it out probably L-A-Y-M, you know. Or when you see my name spelled out, it sounds like Lehman Brothers, which I'm not affiliated with. But the point is that I started video blogging because I figured that's it grew. Uh-huh. And I added video to my website. And the story is that people paid more attention to my video than my resume, than my 2 degrees, than working at IBM. So whatever. We get that. We want to do video like you do. Well, you're kind of missing my point because video is something that I use to market myself as a salesman and trainer.
Right.
But you get that question asked 5 or 6 times, and when you're in a startup, in fact, I do video, and that became an itch. And now it's what I leverage on is my revenue generator.
Well, it's funny. So it seems that you've almost, to a certain extent, fell into this, but you fell into it for all the right reasons. It was something that you were doing. It was something you were doing well, and there was a market need for it. So that's the best kind of business to be starting, as opposed to one where you're just supposing or hoping that there's going to be interest or a desire for what your products and services are.
You know, it kind of grew, and it that's what I'm working on. So it started with just doing simple video. As a video blogger, I mean, I really kind of I'm a salesman and trainer, and I do freelance video productions. Mm-hmm. We can get into the core of that. At the end of the day, in layman's terms, I'm a salesman that's passionate about social media and video, and I love to help sell and train via video. Not your internet video marketing guy, but really trying to do that core principles of social selling, which you know quite well about.
Right, and so it's interesting because you're at an intersection, kind of on a corner, if you will, between that social selling, also looking at it from a B2B perspective, more than a B2C or both?
You know, it's both, actually. Mm-hmm. I've B2B business, and then I've done B2C. I'm actually working a project right now that's B2C, doing training videos for grill parts. Mm-hmm. You got a Weber grill or a Charbroil grill, and you need to replace the burner or the heat shield or the heat plate.
Yeah.
It's real interesting stuff.
I've been there.
but they're internal videos. Okay, that would be kind of B2C. Somebody looking for a burner. Why would they order from the Grill Garage as opposed to ABC Grill Company?
Because the Grill Garage is the one who had the video and how
exactly.
to
fix it. That's what they're trying to bank on. And you know, but I've done a lot of book reviews, which is B2C.
Yeah.
And that's really where I started getting my following with video. I started putting content out there to attract people, and McGraw-Hill reached out to me at the publishing company.
Wow,
and they send me books every month to do book reviews. Now, I'm not really getting paid, but I'm getting exposure. Hopefully that will change on that.
But. So tell me how this works. So it's book reviews and there's a video aspect to it? Or is
you can do, you know, it started as I started doing book reviews on Amazon.com. You can do, obviously with Amazon, you can do video product reviews. You can buy a set of headphones. You can buy, you know, a grill part, or you could buy a lawnmower, whatever you want to buy, whatever your flavor is, but you can do product reviews. Mm-hmm. Well, I noticed people were doing video reviews and books. So I did Eric Quammen, who's an internationally best-selling author of a book called Socialnomics, Now the Digital Leader, Now What Happens in Vegas Stays on YouTube.
I've seen that one.
so basically, Eric, I figured, why not take a book from somebody who's really famous and whatever and do a review? Well, at the time, McGraw-Hill saw the video review, and they asked me, hey, we'd like you to be part of our team. We'll send you books every month. And I've bonded a friendship with Eric. Now I get a couple of his books, and he's written a few more, obviously. But that was my strategy. But they reached out to me. They saw the video content that I was doing, and I've probably done about 20 reviews on Amazon. But I try to keep it in the elements of video, business, social media, and sales. Those are the four areas. I'm not really doing a cookbook. Mm-hmm. Book review or how to repair a motorcycle review.
Right, so it ends up dovetailing back into your own world.
Exactly. I'm trying to bring it all back to this guy that likes to do social media sales training with the video edge to it.
That's really fascinating, Doug. I mean, I've not thought of using that as a marketing tool. nor did have I. I don't think I've ever seen these the video book reviews, but it's something I'm definitely going to check out because I'm constantly on the look for the for a good business book in the
And it's fun now that I'm getting the books that are of interest to me.
Yeah.
You know, the first book I ever did was, and you've had her on the show, Barb Giamanco.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm doing a project with Barb right now. I'm doing a video blog series we're working on. We've got about 8 videos. And Barb, when you do the voiceovers, we'll release them. So shout out to you. But the point is, she's one of my mentors and one of the people I team up with. But that's another format of video.
Right.
And it's doing a blog training series. So I'm looking forward to getting that out. I'm tired of talking about it. I just want to show it to you.
Yeah, that's the great thing about the line of business you're in. It's not just talking about it. It's like, here it is. I know that you know, we've worked in the past together, and one of the greatest things about being able to talk about what it is you do is to simply show people.
Right.
So being able to, you know, see those videos, see what you do, see how it intersects between business and video is really important, because when you go to make a video, tell us a little bit. I mean, what sorts of things do people run into? What sorts of objections do people run into when it comes to doing video?
Objections for video, mm-hmm. simply, I don't want to be in the video. You can sell them on the value of the video. I get it from a search engine optimization thing, you know, from a standpoint of telling a story. It's more compelling than written forms of text and audio. Mm-hmm. It dumbs it down. We're a TV generation. They get all that. But I just don't want to be on the video. So the question I have to them is, one, you don't have to be in the video to have the benefits of video. You can do pictures or a slideshow and put it in a video format. Two, you can get somebody else to do your video for you. Or better yet, have your customers or clients do a testimonial video for you. So now you're leveraging word of mouth, the power of social media, and that whole intrinsic motivation type stuff.
Do people fear that it's going to be a huge expense? I know that there was a day when making video was a pretty expensive proposition. Is that something?
Oh, no doubt. That's a big question. And I'm such the opposite, because I shoot all my video with a camera that's about a $200 camera that shoots 1080p HD quality. It's above level of a flip camera.
Mm-hmm.
And I've got, which we run a radio meeting. I can't really show it to you, but everything I do is I shoot in high def. If it's a Kodak ZI-8, it's a camera that no longer make anymore. So it's basically a flip camera with a mic jack in settings. But I do all my video production with that. I throw in the green screen. That being said, to answer your question, now you can shoot the same quality video with your iPad, your iPhone, your Samsung Galaxy 4, 5, whatever the phone you have, with a smartphone, you can do that. It's just a few things you got to do to massage it to make it look good. Editing is one. But to answer, I've got a little long-winded about
it. No, it's keep going.
But the point is that now it's a game changer, because it's cost-effective. 10 years ago, we wouldn't be having this conversation.
You know, it's surprising to me. You mentioned that you're using fairly nothing that's, you know, too expensive from a equipment perspective. Because I've looked at your videos, and really, from my perspective, they look as professional as anything else I see out there. I will also mention that one of my clients, I was talking just a couple weeks ago with, they were talking about how their agency, their digital agency, was charging them like, you know, in the $250,000 range, you know, to do a video. I'm assuming that working with these types of gear, people can get in at a much lower threshold.
It all depends what your audience is and what you want to do.
Mm-hmm.
See, my target audience is an entrepreneur, a small business owner, a speaker, an author, the Grill Garage, you know, people like that who are looking, you know, just a storytelling video.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's a lot of great video companies here in Atlanta that I've reached out to, because as a video blogger, I think an ideal position for me, if I was moving into another area, would be a sales or business development person with a high-end video company, because I get the sales, I get the video, I get the storytelling, I can go out and sell, you know, the $10,000, the $25,000 video package, you know.
Right.
But ideally, I shoot. I'm a total turnkey solution. I shoot the video, I edit the video, and if you want my ugly face in the video as a talent, I'll do that as well.
Well, let's not go too far here, Doug. You know, the ugly face. People will be able to see your face on the webpage when we put it up, right, Kevin? Well,
exactly.
Yeah. No, that you know, and I think that's important. So for your clients, having the whole package, and I was going to mention that I think that one of the things that anybody who's involved in video today has to be, that they can't just be a camera person. They have to also be able to understand and tell that story. So do you think that's something you've had innately? Is it something you've learned? How did you learn? What sorts of things?
Good question. You're right about storytelling. And that's something that I position when I meet with a client, is that, okay, we'll shoot your video, but we also want to tell the story. And the secret sauce is I also want to keep it social, which we'll get into. Because you can have your video produced, you can have a great story, but if nobody sees it, nobody watches it, nobody comments on it, you're not leveraging the full thing. There's a lot of video companies say, hey, we just did our video. Good luck. Have at it.
Yeah.
That's another. But back to the point of scripting and having a storytelling, it's something that I've learned. I studied everything. Like 2.5 years ago, I didn't go to school as a video producer. I'm a guy that started with a Kodak ZI-8 and a flip camera.
Mm-hmm.
I read everything online. I read every sale. Tried to win out everything. I tried to engross myself as much content when it came to video marketing and sales. And just network with people. So I study. Now I watch TV differently, or I watch commercials differently. I watch videos differently. Because I want to see what the story is. I want to know what the call to action is. And this is stuff that I self-taught.
You know,
some of the first videos that I did, you know, just look, I'm just doing a video. Well, that's great. What's the point?
Right. You didn't have the call to action. So you learned a lot of things over time.
Yeah, you definitely learn. And then now I get to the point where now I script it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'll script a video. I'll work with people. Like, what do they want to do? What kind of effects? Even testimonial videos.
Mm-hmm.
That's something where I'm filming other people at an event, and they're giving me their 30 seconds about the event. I remember when I first started doing that, they weren't really. I tried to position them more like case studies. People are saying, hey, that's a great event where you should be here, have a great time. That's really not a takeaway if I'm the viewer watching. So now I'm at a point where I'm coaching people in the testimonies. Okay, make sure you tell a takeaway. So if, you know, Sander or Ken or Bob or Betty, who's at home watching this video, will want to go to that event, give them a takeaway. Give them value.
Yeah, you know? I noticed that. So you coach some of those people before they get on.
Right, and that's something that I just learned doing, you know, simple things that you do. You go an event, especially, I'm just going to say it, a women's networking event. You hold you do the lapel mic thing. That's a little bit, you know, you're violating some space here. You put a microphone in most women's hands, they become a news reporter instantly. And holding the mic, but it makes them feel comfortable. Yeah. Or men or women in general, having that mic in their hand, they're like, hey, look at me, I'm a news guy. Lapel. I used to do the lapel, but you know, at the point is you want them to be natural.
Right.
I didn't know this stuff 3 years ago. You know, I've learned, and I've learned the editing. The editing is something that I'm constantly learning. Now I'm doing new screen, like Sports Center look stuff. So all my stuff that's coming out, and when we get the videos done with Barb, it's a new center type thing. I'm excited about.
Are you doing green screen for that?
Green screen, and we're incorporating a voiceover and myself. It's a perfect example. Barb's going to be in the video, but she's not actually in the video, but she's in the video, if that makes sense. We're incorporating a picture and a voiceover and some things just to leverage that. So
cool.
It's just you learn. The answer, long-winded answer here, you learn by doing. But I'm constantly going on webinars. I'm constantly reading books. Constantly trying to up my game.
Mm-hmm. So what else is important? Like, you know, you've obviously worked with lots and lots of clients. What do you think is important from their perspective? If we have a potential client listening to this this interview, what's important to a client when they're choosing a videographer or somebody who's going to do video for them? What do you think are the most important things that they should be looking out for in somebody who produces video?
There's two things they want to look at. They want to look at being able to make them look real, authentic, and engaging. Mm-hmm. You know, having it mean something. They don't want to look like a robot on camera, or in some cases, they don't look like the overhyped salesperson.
Mm-hmm.
They definitely want to come off correctly on the video. The second thing, and really the most important thing, is a lot of businesses, I want to do video. I want to get views. I want my storefront to blow up. I want hits. I want action. I want, you know,
viral.
I want it to go viral. But so there's things in that I coach with. I can't guarantee a video is going to go viral. I can help with your video SEO, certain tricks of the trade, keywords, titles, tags, and descriptions on the video, some back end office stuff. But being able to share it, have a video strategy.
Mm-hmm. You know, I want to point out, because on this, to do this as gingerly as possible, at a company that I used to work at, there was a group of guys, there was a new product that had been launched, and these guys wanted to do some how-to videos on how to use this product. Well, they violated both of the things you talked about there. First of all, they looked real stilted and stunted when they spoke online, and I don't know who they used. It was very professional looking, but they did that. And then once they were done, I think they were done in that they just didn't, like, okay, we got that dang video done. They posted it, and everyone walked away. right? So they spent, in that case, you know, a lot of money, not looking so good, and then just posting something that no one ever looked at.
No, it's funny because you get what you pay for, but you got to have a strategy.
And yeah.
I used to, when I first did my videos, I just walk off. Mm-hmm. Like walk off the stage. I mean, for effect, sometimes that's good, but I was just, you know, it's amateur hour. I just walked off like, okay, I'm done. I didn't realize it. Yeah, you know, a lot of people were telling me.
You can't just walk away.
Yeah, or disappear, fade to black or something. But no, being able to tell the story, you see a lot of high-end, you know, I'll be honest with you. I don't have the 3D effect. I'm shooting with this camera. Mm-hmm. I make a good quality web video product. I'm not a cinematographer. I don't claim to be. And there's a lot of people out there, but I've seen some real high-end video production, but the story is whack. There's no storyline, and it's just not compelling. Depends what the person wants to do with the video. What's their, you know, it goes down to making your video. One, is it watchable?
Mm-hmm.
And watchable mean, can you hear it? Can you see it? Can you bear to watch it? Two, is it findable? Can you find it online through search engines? Second, third would really be, is it shareable? Do people want to share your video? And the fourth thing is actionable. Is there a call to action? So it's really watchable, shareable, findable, and actionable.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that's something I put in layman's terms, but that's how I proceed of every video.
Right. So watchable is one thing. And then now you're talking about having that plan. So how are you going to put it into social media?
Right.
Let's go to that point, and then we'll go straight down the line here to shareable and then actionable.
Okay.
But let's talk about, first of all, findable. What sorts of things do people need to think about when they're trying to make a video that's going to be have their video findable?
Well, there's a couple of things. And as I said earlier, why do you even want to go through the steps? Some video production companies will shoot the video and have at it. Good luck.
Mm-hmm.
Good luck, Sander. You know, here's your video. You know, good luck. Making it findable would be just some simple and SEO things, search engine optimize your video. People don't do that when they host it on a YouTube or a Vidler or a Vimeo account, whatever hosting account. I find it amazing. If you go into somebody's LinkedIn profile, they'll fill it out. Their Facebook profile, most people fill that out. Their Twitter, you've got 140 characters to fill out. But when they host a video, the titles, there might be a title. There might not be, but the description, the tags, the keywords, it's blank. You go through all this trouble to make the video, and I totally understand. You're out there, you're filming it, and you're probably going through some hurdles to get the video done. I uploaded my video. It's on YouTube. I'm done. Well, that's really when the work starts, because now you got to go in, you got to do the back office. And what I mean by have a title of your video, some keywords, some descriptions, all this helps out with optimization. Being able to, so people can go in and they can go into Google and YouTube as the second largest search engine and find your video. So that helps with making it findable, having your video fully optimized.
Right. So, but like what can the individuals do? I mean, certainly there's the SEO. That's great. Right. And that's something that you can give expertise around.
Oh absolutely.
But what other things do you tell people to do that they should just as individuals with that site or with that video?
First thing is, how are you distributing your video? Okay, let's say you have it on your website and you have it on let's just say YouTube channel. Are you positioning your social networking sites? So you put a video out there on YouTube. You can put it on LinkedIn. You can put it on Facebook. You can put it on Google+. You can put it on Twitter. You can take a picture of it and put it on Pinterest and Instagram and Vine and all those other platforms. Mm-hmm. So leveraging your social channels to get more exposure.
Your personal social channels.
Both, your business and personal. It all depends what target audience you want to do.
Mm-hmm.
I do a lot of different videos. Like I said, I have at the Grill Garage. I got three rap artists out of Baltimore, soundtrack called Harder Than Baltimore, totally different genre.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm filming them, and it's another lamest terms of Doug show. I'm having fun with that. That's really not going to play really on the social selling TV tip thing, but it's a different audience. But they're Facebook friendly. They are so into that. That's their audience.
Right.
And that's, you know, maybe even MySpace for them. You know, they're still around for music. But it all depends on where your viewers are. I'm just going to use the word viewers as opposed to clients.
So you go where they are is what you're trying to say.
And then I think the third point I talked about, shareable.
Yeah, let's go to shareable.
Ask people to comment on your video. Make your video so people can respond, good, bad, or indifferent. Encourage people to
comment. What do you think, right?
Yeah, what do you think? Comment below.
Yeah.
You do on a blog post, don't you? Usually share your thoughts and concerns.
Yeah.
You know, have a call to action on the video. You know, share it. You know, obviously make it so people can embed the code so they can share it. So making it shareable helps with your audience and response rate. Because then if somebody shares your video, somebody shares your, you know, plus one on Google Plus.
Right, right.
That's huge.
Well, and the other thing for me with shareable, it kind of ties back to watchable, is like, it's not only watchable, it's interesting, right? So you've got something that that people will say, that was cool, and you know, say to their friends, you've got to see this. Now, obviously, they could be doing that through those methods that you're talking about, but making something that's really cool, interesting, fun. I'm sure after working with clients over the years that you've had situations where clients have ideas and you're like, oh man, I don't know if anyone's going to really want to see that. Any good stories there?
Well, even from a video, even from content, the biggest thing is I don't think people want to see it. I'm working with a recruiting firm, and actually two, I've got a video that's, cross our fingers, may get on Shark Tank.
Right. We were talking about that a couple weeks ago.
Right. And I was telling, you know, and he's got a great story. But I don't need a 10-minute video.
Yeah.
Okay. It was 5, not up 10, whatever. So sometimes it's too much. We live in an attention, our attention span is short. And I'm not going to give the perfect time for a video. What's a perfect video? Short, sweet, to the point. But if it's too long, you can weed that out. People are going to, it's not going to tune in.
Yeah, they're going
to. So that's the thing. Being able to have your information and bullet points. Also, with the visual element, it's a little bit different than when you read something. People want to say so much in a video. Well, you can say a lot, and you can put visual text to get to the point. You can shorten it up. Mm-hmm. I mean that visually. You could say, if you like, call to action, check out our website, go to our Twitter page. All that stuff can pop up while they're talking, and so you don't have to say all that.
And go to our website. Yeah.
Yeah, you know, and there's a point where you want to – it depends on the type of video that you want to do. I mean, I study everybody. So if you want to do the over-top sales, I'm going to name some people that I study that are all different styles.
Uh-huh.
Grant Cardone. He's definitely, you know, he's over-the-top used car salesman type of guy. There's a guy that's been here on Atlanta Business Radio, my mentor, Victor Antonio.
Uh-huh.
Victor crushes video and sales training. He's number one in my book. Uh-huh. Not because he's a good friend and he's coaching me and helping me in every regard. Forget all that. His videos, they're not all that complicated, but he breaks it down. It's simple. He's engaging. He's compelling. And he's got, you know, an author of 12 plus books or whatever. He's got so much leverage and so much credibility, but his videos are fun.
Right.
And they're to the point. And if anybody wants to study any type of sales training video, I mean, you can have all these great lists of the top social media people and all that, and trainers. Victor's by far, because he doesn't market himself on that level, but yeah, he crushes it.
Yeah. Well, okay, so let's jump to the last one. Action.
And that's my shout out for Victor. So you know.
Well,
you know,
we'll take that. Make sure we hit him on Twitter, right, Kevin? you're shouting up a lot of people. I'm like going to have to hit a lot of at signs on this one. Okay. When we eventually get done here. But let's talk about the last one, actionable. All right, so that I agree that so many times you'll see a video. Maybe it's cool. Maybe it's like I'd even want to share it. But you know, it might be for a brand, and I wonder to myself, what is the brand trying to get me to do other than saying, oh yeah, I know those guys.
Have you ever, like, you've watched TV commercials and then you watch and you really thought, I was entertained, but I don't know what that was all about.
Right.
Kind of effect. Or the way The Sopranos ended, where it faded to black and you had to come up with your own concept. I don't know if you saw the last.
Boo, yeah.
Yeah, so you're not really sure. I mean, everybody has their own ideas.
Uh-huh.
I was personally hoping that AJ would have gotten whacked, but I did just saying that.
Well, you could do that because they gave you the artistic license to think that, but I agree. So just tell me what happened so I can either be happy about it or not.
But having a call to action, being able to have what's your point in the video? What do you want the viewer to do next?
Mm-hmm.
You know, without coming, you know, subscribe to my channel. If you like what you hear, comment below, share it. We have a video playlist. This is the first of 700 videos, mm-hmm. whatever. Give them something to do, and in fact, I recommend doing that not at the end, but also somewhere in the beginning. In the beginning of the video, you want to tell them what's in the video
right. Immediately.
In this video, we're going to talk about this, this, and this, and then get into intro, then get into the body of the video, and then have a strong close.
Because otherwise, you'll never get there. People won't even watch it, or they
won't
watch that.
Exactly.
Tell me, you know, one of the things, and now we're getting into like some more advanced stuff, but one of the things on YouTube that's big is subscribing, right? So if you're going to be doing a lot of videos, you want people to subscribe to your content so that they can see when you have new content out there, et cetera. What's your take on that? I mean, is that important anymore?
I wish I had more subscribers. So anybody listening or watching or listening to this on replay, please subscribe to
SocialSellingTV.com, right?
So go to my YouTube channels. I got a couple of them. But it's a community, and there's two ways to look at it. Okay, think about LinkedIn, and that's where I get, and that's where I think YouTube's gonna go, and that's why I keep saying, let's put the social in your video. That's my thing, generate more business, increase sales, and build brand awareness, something to that effect, one of the three. But
all three sounds good to me.
But the point is, subscribers are, I think it's gonna get to the point where it's like your LinkedIn connections and your followers on Twitter, from a business perspective. Right now, subscribers are just fans and advocates. But it's a community. And YouTube, you can send, you know, emails through YouTube. YouTube is a social networking site, plus it's a video platform. And there's other video hosting sites as well. It's not just YouTube. But the point is, subscribers, it's a fan base, a following. My thing about views, I mean, I want a lot of views, but I just really, if I'm in sales and I'm in training, I just want the one view that's going to turn around and do business.
Amen to that.
So views, you know, all the internet video marketing people, views are great. But we want conversions. I just want conversations. Say, hey, Doug, I saw your video, and I want to do business with you. You and I were on a show called, or a first ever social selling with the Sharks, where we had to enter a video contest. By the way, I thought you should have won. Not that I'm on your show
well,
today.
Thank you.
But, came in third place myself. But it doesn't
matter. We were both on that thing.
but the top two were prize winners. But no, I'm not bitter.
But both from Atlanta too, because that was a nationwide thing. So right. It was pretty amazing that you know, two guys from Atlanta, two and three there.
It was some fun stuff. But the point was that I leveraged videos to get the grill company, not the one I have now, which became part of that. But just being able to leverage video. But so if I get one person that likes my video, comments on it, and they'll do business with me, that's all I care. I'm not. For me, this is just me speaking, because one, I don't have thousands of subscribers. If I did, I would have a different thing about that.
Right.
It's, you know, LinkedIn, if you got the right connection to get the right business deal, there you go.
Yeah, I kind of agree with you. I think that people, especially on YouTube, get hung up on how many subscribers you have, and that's fine if you're someone who gets a million subscribers, a million views a day, and that you're making money off ad revenue on YouTube. But I think, you know, in the business-to-business world, or even the business-to-consumer world, it's really about reaching the right consumer, right business person, in order to make that sale. I think that that's something that's sort of sorely missing right now.
Right.
It's just, you know, what's your opinion on that?
No, I totally agree. And I think, and this is where I've kind of based my mantra on with social selling video, is I will use video as a salesperson to reach out to a potential client. And I've done customized videos. But you can't touch everybody. You can't get a face-to-face meeting with everybody.
All right. We got to do this. I think let's go for it. Let's try to make Bland a huge client by just making a video for him.
Right.
What are you doing after the show?
Well, we're going to get that drink, I think, right?
Do you have your camera with you?
Actually, I have some cameras in the car, but, you know, we've got a phone we can
all
do.
All right,
that,
we got something hatched here, Kevin.
But yeah, exactly. Just being able to leverage the video as part of your sales arsenal.
Yeah, I think that the other thing that happens is marketing organizations, where budgets generally come from for things like this, they want to see some sort of return on investment, right? And so while it's very difficult, and, you know, the thing I always throw back is, well, in general marketing, how do you find return on investment? People say, well, what about leads? Oh, give me a break. You know, leads from trade shows, leads that are generated from brochures and things like that. It's the most corrupted science that probably has ever existed. But now with social, people are asking that same question. Like, you know, can you show me the ROI on this thing?
Yeah, and that's something that traditional marketing, how are you measuring that? How are you measuring the effect of putting your newspaper ad or putting something out on a billboard?
You aren't, yeah.
Right, and then how do you let me ask the follow-up question is, how do you share a billboard?
Right.
But you could share a video or a tweet or a LinkedIn post. You can share that. I don't see myself walking down Cobb Parkway and pulling up a billboard and go, hey, Kevin, hey, look, I got this.
Yeah. Well, I mean,
I may be able to hand you a newspaper or a magazine article. I probably could do that.
Yeah, I have to share a story I want to get your feedback on this. A number of years ago, I was working for a large company, and in the market that I was in, which was in Atlanta, it was a small, much smaller market. They're like, well, you know, we'd like to do some advertising for B2B. So they put up one billboard, uno, right? And it was, I mean, and you were just hoping to heck, like, you know, okay, we put all our money and all our eggs in one, this one billboard, you know, and it was up there on the side of the highway. Jeez. I mean, you know, I just remember painting myself going to drive by that thing.
I still think print and build, they have their play. Mm-hmm. I just think it's up to the marketing and the financial teams to decide how they want to allocate their money. Because I think video or whatever, or social, we're just talking about social in general.
Yeah.
And video, obviously, what I'm passionate about, there's a budget for that. And you overcome that. And the whole thing about return on investment, I love when they throw that out there because it's all relative. Because return on investment is like, okay, Gary Vaynerchuk said something to the effect that return on investment for me playing the piano, not so much. But for Elton John,
big.
Okay. Well, so, you know, it all depends how you strategize, you know, with that. But, you know, I think there needs a marketing mix, you know,
right.
And whether it's social, leveraging video, at the end of the day, you want to get viewership. But more importantly, you want subscribers. And if you're in retail, you want people coming to your store to shop in that case.
Well, and the other thing I think it's real important and we should talk about is the power of making more than one, right? So making one thing you're going to put all – we just talked about it, putting all your eggs into one basket of one video, let's imagine. You may or may not get it right. I mean, that you may or may not engage people with that.
Right.
Right? So do you? What do you recommend is if people are looking at video, do you recommend them doing a series or what's your –
I think doing obviously more than one video, but test the waters, you know, start out small and then kind of build your craft.
Mm-hmm.
I'm big into multiple videos with playlist and video series. So that you may be able to catch somebody on another day with another video and just it shows up more. But
explain that. I'm not sure I understand. But.
Okay, what I meant by a video series.
Yeah.
One of the things that, you know, put it in layman's terms, yeah. From a video playlist, you can do a video series. And group it in a playlist. So when one video plays, the next video plays, and next. So you want to get eyes on it. You want to get people to see it and be engaged.
Mm-hmm.
One video, you have to start with one. First thing is getting started.
Yeah.
And the second thing is just, you know, bringing in more content. I mean, it depends what you want to do in your first video. Do you want to have a welcome page via your website? And we all know that video on a website makes people stay on the website longer.
Right.
And it increases stickiness by 40%. I could throw a bunch of stats and numbers. Everybody's pretty much on board. The video is powerful. It's the next best thing to be in there. If a picture's worth 1,000 words, what's video? All that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But being able to just start with a video. And if it's not necessarily you, just have a customer do a testimonial.
Yeah.
Or a slideshow.
Just get out there, you're saying. Just get something started.
Yeah, and then build on that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you got to walk before you can run.
Right, see how it goes and then sort of
take it from there. Then, you know, replicate and duplicate if it works. If it doesn't, you know, recreate and do something new with it.
Yeah.
I mean, it's the same thing in anything in business. If it doesn't work, learn from your mistakes, fail fast, fail forward, and keep it moving.
Well, Doug, I mean, your story is inspiring. And again, I wanted to touch back on just your entrepreneurship over the last couple of years and maybe talk about your journey with that. Did you have any experience as an entrepreneur prior to leaving the big company and going on your own?
No, none whatsoever. And I encourage people to have some little bit of training and experience.
You do, huh?
Yeah. My story is, like I said 3 years ago, I wouldn't have said that I would be walking around doing video production and doing video blogging and sales training videos and things. I took the severance pay and decided, hey, I want to try something new, and I kind of just went that route.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, I still at times look at the corporate side. I'd like to have more corporate clients to be involved in that. So if you're interested in some video blogging and video training, I'm here. But it's selfless, shameless promotion right there. But
yeah, that's socialsellingtv.com.
Exactly. But more importantly, no, I've learned a lot. I continue to learn.
Mm-hmm.
And it's been a maturation process. So,
what's the most exciting, the best part of being an entrepreneur, being your own boss and doing your own thing?
Just the flexibility and time, but being able to put in what you get in.
Mm-hmm.
When you're working for somebody or in a corporate mindset, you're limited to certain things of creativity.
Mm-hmm.
But there's also, you know, there's a negative side.
All right, so I was going to say, so what's the worst part about it, Doug?
Worst part about it is when you're starting out and you're building it, it's not a stable, you know, stable thing for me anyway. I can speak mm-hmm. to my, you're not used to getting that check and the benefits every 2 weeks and this and that. There's the structure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I think that is a big concern, and I think that regardless of who you are, how successful you are, whether you're just a little successful, a lot successful, I think that it doesn't matter. That structure is gone, and it can stress you out a little bit. Regardless.
Right, you know, and just project to project. Right now, I mean, I've had some great fun doing this, and it's been exciting. It's also been like, what am I doing? And that's just me, though. Well, I mean, you've had...
It isn't, I was laughing because it's not just you, but finish your thought.
There's a lot of people that come on this show and a lot of people that come to the studio that talk their stories. I mean, you got Eric Hosqual was in your last show, I believe.
Yeah,
and I know
right.
Eric. I had a phone call with Eric last week.
Uh-huh.
And I look at his entrepreneur journey and something. Yeah. I met him when he was doing, I want to say it's Inside Focus. He was a marketing research company.
Yeah.
And I saw his journey. So everybody's got a story to tell.
Mm-hmm.
It's just, I look at it as people, if I'm interviewing for a corporate job, they go, have you worked on commission? Well, if you look at my resume, absolutely yes. And every day of my life, what I've done the last 2 years.
I've been on commission.
I'm 100% commission. If I don't commission, I don't eat. So
right.
So it's not like, you know, that's the part that I get a chuckle out of when I get asked by some junior recruiter on that point. But, you know, I had that conversation about a month ago. But it's a challenge, but there's also the flexibility.
Right. And I think that, you know, the other thing about being an entrepreneur is there's always the hope. Every single day is a new day, regardless of how much success you've had, you know, that this might be the day that you hit it super big. And you know, you've been a successful entrepreneur. The fact that you're still doing this after 2 years, to me, I look up to you because that's not always the case. And a lot of times, what happens to entrepreneurs, and I think really the definition of failure is the refusal to get back up. And you know, is anyone who's still with it, regardless, you know, anyone who might be listening who's struggling with their own business right now, I think it's important for them to hear from people like Eric and yourself and others that, you know what, it isn't always easy. It's not like everything's been one slam dunk after the other, but the goodness of it is in the journey, and that success comes to those who stick with it.
No, and there's a lot of great people. Like Eric's been successful. Mm-hmm. I bring up Victor Antonio again. Victor was in corporate training and sales and did quite well.
Yeah,
and quite well. And I think it was 8 years ago he decided, you know what, I want to be a sales trainer, motivational speaker, and now he's turning it up. But he said his journey was like, look, I started, and his whole thing, he leveraged his whole business, his consulting business, through video.
Mm-hmm.
His video is his marketing thing. That's what I do. I've got hundreds of videos that teach you and train you, and I'm a subject matter expert. You can forget about the books, the degrees, that all helps, but this is what I'm doing. And I like his philosophy because he started, just reinvented himself.
Right. He started from scratch.
Right.
Without a doubt. Man, well, this has been fascinating conversation, Doug. Now, I do have a few more things I want to touch on. You're a Midwesterner by birth, having gone to both Western Michigan University.
First round loss in the tournament to Syracuse this year.
Okay. And Kent State, I don't think that they were in the tournament at all.
No, they've been in the tournament in the past. I did my master's out there, had a coffee break out there. They're both in the Mid-American Conference.
Okay, well, the Mid-America is, I was reading an article on the plane about the Mid-American Conference in the latest USA Airways magazine, so up-and-comer for sure. But so I don't even want to ask them where you're at with the tournament this year.
No, I tell you what, I grew up in Northern Indiana. I'm a basketball fiend.
Yeah.
Indiana Hoosier fan, and I could bore you with what we're going through without enough players, this, that, and the other. But
the sports show is coming on right after this, so maybe you can stick around.
Okay.
So.
But more importantly, you know, no, but yeah, I'm trying to remember what the question was. The tournament going on right now?
Yeah.
I think I hit you with a tweet. The Final Four, I could care. There's not one rootable team for me, and I'll tell you why. I mean, I don't know. I'm just going to offend some people if that's okay.
Quickly. We'll lose listeners here. But yeah.
Obviously, from Indiana, I don't like Kentucky. But I do like what Calipari is doing with the one. I mean, I'm just going to be going against the norm. What he's playing to the talent, one and done, re-recruit, reload, rebuild, and get it done. Don't like the Kentucky fan base. Can't stand a Florida fan base. I think UConn is a little sketchy at best. They've got some things in history. And I don't despise Wisconsin's plotting style, even though they're a Big Ten team.
Yeah.
I just never.
It's hard to root for those guys. It's boring.
Right now, I'm ready for next year. But no, I love basketball, and I totally will be watching it.
Yeah, and I wanted to end on this. I noticed that you got a degree in sports administration. Did you ever do anything with that after college?
I finished up graduate school at mm-hmm. Kent State. Worked at Youngstown State University for Jim Trussell, former Ohio State coach, and now he's a Akron administrator. I worked for Coach Trussell for 2 years when he won his first 1AA football title. He went on to win four and win one at Ohio State. Mm-hmm. So I worked there in sports administration, and then I moved to Atlanta for the Olympics, and I worked with the Coca-Cola in the Coca-Cola Olympic City. I still love doing sports and entertainment. I promote a boxer online and video work. So that's the other mantra of me. We can go into some other day.
So that's what brought you to Atlanta to begin with then, huh?
I had family down here, but I didn't want to live in Northeast Ohio or Northern Indiana. I wanted to move down here, Atlanta. You've got the Olympics were coming in 96. I moved here in 94. There was a lot of marketing opportunities and moved out here. Really went hard with the sports scene. But somewhere along the line, I got into technology. I got into companies like IBM, Sun, Cisco, Skytel at the time. And I kind of went off the beat. And the video entertainment is kind of bringing me back into the sports.
Yeah, it's funny.
It's because I do want to do more work with sports entertainers and doing that. As I said, I've got a boxer, a rap artist, and I got four or five social media trainers. So it's video. It's storytelling.
Yeah, and you know what? It's great because every single week we have somebody new, different on the show from a technology, from a new media perspective. And it's amazing the amount of talent and how close-knit the community is. I mean, you know Eric, you know other people who've been on the show. We've been joking around. I mean, you knew Kevin and some of the folks here at Business Radio X. And so, you know, it's interesting how all this stuff kind of dovetails together. But it's been fantastic having you on the show.
Well, I appreciate it.
Doug, one more time, tell our listeners how they can get a hold of you or what you're up to in the...
The quick way, you can go to my website, that's douglehman.com, that's douglehman.com, or just Google Atlanta Video Brand Ambassador or socialsellingtv.com.
Excellent, and it's been great having you on there, and I highly suggest that anyone listening to go check it out. Doug, I've seen a lot of his videos. He does great work. So for High Velocity Business Radio, this is Sander Bean checking out for today. Desiree Scales will be back next week.